Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Hills, close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, February 1st, 2014.
Exciting, exciting.
Yeah.
Talking about unemployment and inflation and deflation.
I'm Jeff McClure, and you can tell because I'm wearing plain, and over next to me is...
Jake, but you're not really wearing plain.
Well, it's one color. It's one color.
Okay. And I'm kind of wearing plaid.
Yeah, you're wearing tiny plaid.
We're both bald, and that's really confusing to the radio listeners.
Right,
they can't tell
who's
talking about. His beard is more white than mine. I'm Jake, and mine has a little bit of salt in there with the pepper.
Well, that's just because you probably put some salt on whatever you ate this morning.
I put some salt on a battery and almost got in trouble.
And let's see, what else were we talking about here? Something of some interest we were talking about when we were so rudely interrupted by Fox News.
Stepping in and...
Oh, yeah,
we were talking
about
the bull market kicking off. If once companies start giving wages to employees, once the scarcity of people looking for jobs picks up so that they have to pay more to their employees, and in some industries that's already happening. In some industries, it never stopped happening. In the programming world, mm-hmm. if you're a good programmer, you never had a problem with jobs during this time period.
For whatever it's worth, if you happen to be one of those people who follow the esoteric measure called emerging markets,
yes,
which we typically have an allocation to in our portfolios, yes, they have taken a hit. Over the last 9 months or so, and it may get a lot worse before it gets better. But one of the things that I track, and I think it's very important, is the flows of investment money into emerging markets. Now, mm-hmm. emerging markets took a particularly large fall in January, but...
They say that's part of the reason for the other market problems that we've seen.
Yeah, theoretically, the reason the large cap stocks were down...
Not even sure it's theoretical. It's just what the media is saying.
...was that the larger companies in the United States get more of their earnings from emerging markets than do smaller companies. I guess there may be some argument there. Well, if emerging markets, currencies and stocks are
there
down...
There you go. Then, currencies, possibly.
And they are.
Uh-huh.
But this is the issue. If you track the actual funds flow, which fortunately I was able to do, there's something happened this month that I think is not on the surface and are being paid a lot of attention to. And that is that while hedge funds, which are hedge funds, that was the bailout. That was the people who were removing their money from emerging markets as fast as they could pull the money out, and they tend to do that as they did in 1998 and other times, which in retrospect, when we look at when hedge funds do that, it's really kind of stupid. But this is the other side of it. The behemoth here, the big money, is not in the hedge funds. It's in the pension funds. It's in the large, stable funds that have done well over a long period of time without being flashy about it. Those funds, very much like our portfolios, have specified allocations that they maintain. They maintain a certain allocation of value to emerging markets so that what we're seeing going on in the system right now is that these large pension funds and trust funds and things of that nature are actually buying into the emerging markets. They don't do so really, really rapidly. Unlike hedge funds, they don't jump in and jump out. But because their allocations have changed, they either are or will be putting money back into the same markets that the hedge funds that are coming out of, which is a real positive down the road for the emerging markets. There's a whole series of issues there. We have a caller there on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, long-time listener. It seems like every time there's a recession, businesses, you know, there's layoffs, obviously, but businesses, you know, get a lot more efficient, and they run a lot more efficient when they come out of the recession, and a lot of the jobs don't seem to come back.
That's right.
You know, it used to be 4.5% unemployment was really full employment in this company, our country, and I was wondering, do you think out of this latest recession, is the new full employment 5.5% the new?
No.
The new full employment. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Yeah, I've got an easy answer for that. Nope.
Why?
I'm going to give some examples here. In Japan, the unemployment rate right now is 2%.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming out of deflation. They are their economy is growing again. I suspect that as our technology increases, and this is something that's worth putting some study to and getting some sites and all of that, but I suspect as technology increases and more people are trained in new technologies, unemployment rates go down so that eventually if you want a job, you get a job, period.
Right. Eventually, I think you're true. I also think, though, in the short term, meaning the next decade or so,
right,
the caller may be right in that there are a tremendous number of people out there who have high-level skills that just aren't needed anymore.
Correct. That's always the case when we come out of a major recession like we've done.
And this is,
in other times, it may have even been called a depression.
Yeah, this is the worst recovery in terms of jobs and in terms of GDP that we've seen literally
since the Great Depression.
Since the Great Depression. The recovery is slower, and because, and it's a very simple issue, this is a financial slash structural recession that we went through that easily could have been a depression. Massive, these are normally result from large scale technological change, and we had large scale technological change going into the 1920s with the internal combustion engine, mainly
infernal combustion,
and we've had a double dip recession this time that could have been a depression, except for the fact that there's a lot of cushioning mechanisms that were put in place during the Great Depression of the 1930s that, by the way, worked very well.
The very fact that unemployment checks were paid is one of the reasons why we weren't there.
And there's another one, Social Security.
Right.
You've got a large retired population that gets paid every month, and they spend their money. And that wasn't there in the Great Depression. Those people just went hungry and didn't have any money to spend and didn't buy anything. And that was in other words, the disaster of the Great Depression that led to World War II didn't happen.
Well, let me explain some of my reasoning here. There is a big set of friction set on retooling and relearning.
Well, just adjust it.
You know, adjust the friction?
Right.
That friction is accredited universities. The cost of universities, for the first time, was below 7% last year. It was at 5%
rise
in basically college inflation costs. It was at 5%, which is really low, considering the fact that we had really low inflation elsewhere. What we're talking about, the cost of education has gone up when the technology to be educated has made it nearly free. We have a set of institutions that are lobbying the lawmaking bodies to not allow new educational facilities to start, even though one of the largest unemployed populations as far as percentages, not as far as actual numbers, is PhD-holding teacher types. We have a huge unemployment rate in that area, in that category, because there are only a few accredited universities. There are some things that are taking place to fight that already. And this is one that's worth looking up. It's exciting. There's something called Singularity University in California that was put together by Ray Kurzweil, who's the head of new technology for Google. He started his life as a 14 or 15-year-old starting a musical manufacturing company. He made keyboards, electronic keyboards, so Kurzweil keyboards, which you, Old Baldy, bought for my brother. You bought a Kurzweil keyboard.
I did.
Ray Kurzweil put together Singularity University, and basically it's following the model that MIT started with, which was all of these hoity-toity universities that cost so much to get into aren't actually training us for the technology that we need to do today. Now MIT is one of those hoity-toity universities that has accreditation and tenure and all these things that cause costs to go up, and they have to limit the number of classes that they have in order to keep the profitability there. Well, Singularity University is saying, we're not accredited, but we're going to train you in the arts that and science of the things that are important today, so that when employers look at your resume and they see that you went to Singularity University, they're going to say, I'm going to hire you, because you learned the things that are necessary to actually do the jobs. So when we're talking about employment, the ability in every recession that we've had in the 20th century, starting from about the 1940s on, the enrollment rate at colleges has gone up during the recession. And this not only is not this recession, it went up at far greater numbers than any other time, which is part of the reason why costs went up. But there's an artificial limitation on how many colleges are out there, how many universities are out there. If you do a Google search right now on free education or free college education, you'll find on YouTube that MIT and Berkeley and the University of Chicago and all these places, all of these wonderful accredited universities, offer most of their coursework online for free. You just don't have a degree at the end. So if you can display the body of knowledge for free, what's the purpose of the degree? And the purpose of the degree is the employer doesn't know if you have the knowledge or not unless you have somebody that says, okay, you've got this. That's the direct answer to unemployment. What is the new full employment? If you've got a job that you're very skilled in and then those skills become obsolete, almost by definition, you're a very intelligent person to get those skills to begin with. In order to continue with your life, you have to retool and relearn so that you can be employed again. Unless we open up education in the same way that we've opened up other areas of the world through technology, then the new full employment may be in the 5%. But as soon as we allow that technology to be somehow accredited to say, okay, these people actually have this knowledge, then we're talking about the future holding a greater possibility of unemployment.
It's definitely got the potential is there. The problem with what you just said is, as always, the fact that people aren't necessarily very rational.
Agreed.
Aren't
necessary. I think you could even say aren't rational.
Well, we're rational to some degree, but we still have the issue, and I'll be the first to talk about this. I'll just confess to the public, I'm in the middle of writing a thesis right now, and it is extremely hard work. I'm having to learn things that contradict what I thought I knew. But that is a very, very rare characteristic, which is one of the reasons I am relatively well off financially, one of the reasons you're relatively well off financially.
We can go back and learn more things.
Well, not that we, it's that we are willing to put in a tremendous, matter of fact, that's what we're talking about over the break. We're willing to suffer to accept a lower standard of living temporarily, to strain our brains and feel a great deal of pain mentally and emotionally and sometimes physically.
It hurts the pride. When you take a test and you consider yourself an expert on something, you take a test and they go, oh, no, you're wrong here and here and here and here.
And you really don't know what the heck you're talking about, but you thought you did. Nobody likes to admit that. One of the problems that is just across the board is that people have a powerful tendency to try to continue to utilize a knowledge and a skill that's no longer viable. Worse.
Or to apply it to things that don't, that was never viable on.
Worse than that is every time I see somebody that's of high school age or lower end of college or something, I ask them, are you going to school? What are you planning on studying? A lot of the people that I talk to are about to or are spending a great deal of money acquiring an education in a skill that probably won't be there in 10 years.
Correct.
And the universities, the colleges are...
That's why I'm saying there's got to be a new form of this. There's got to be a new form of education.
We're dealing
with something that's obsolete in itself.
It's a free market system, though. It's a free market system. And they come there and they say, for instance, one person I was talking to said, I'm going to study to be an ultrasound technician.
Oh, dear.
And I said, you really might want to look beyond that. And she said, why? And I said, because that can be done by a computer. That can be done by a robot.
It will be done.
Oh, no. It will always take a person standing there to do that.
And it will not.
Completely disagree with that. She wasn't interested in listening, and she and her parents have, it's Temple College where she's studying, and Temple College is responsive to what people want to pay them for. People willing to pay Temple College to train in a field that there's currently. There may be job openings in that field right now. But in the long term, somebody looking strategically at that can see pretty quickly that there are the only things that computers can't do are something that requires original thought.
Right. Well, let me give you a real quick example of the ultrasound technician. There's new technology out there. Basically, you lie down if you're pregnant, and they put a little blanket over your belly.
I've never been pregnant.
No, I haven't either, but I've been pregnant with thought.
You've thought if you're pregnant. You lie down if you're pregnant. Well, I won't lie down. Okay.
They can do this for thyroid. They can, if they're checking your thyroid through ultrasound, they're checking whatever. They lay a blanket that this is not available out on the general public yet, but it's being tested. They just lay a blanket on you instead of rolling a device like a pin with a roller on it all over your body. They lay a blanket on you, and they get three-dimensional images with ultrasound of the stuff inside you. There's nobody moving the thing around and saying, okay, what am I touching here? And the computers are recognizing the shapes and identifying them saying, this is a weird thing. Somebody may need to look at that. Eventually, it's going to say, this is a weird thing. It means this.
As she said, there will always need to be somebody standing there.
No,
sure.
It won't.
Yeah, but somebody will have to put the blanket on them. But the point is, putting the blanket on them is basically a minimum wage job.
Right.
Whereas,
and I'm not even sure that's going to happen. When you walk into a room and a voice says, please put the blanket over your belly.
Well, I think it's entirely possible.
Or a robot does it.
That there will be
please lie down on the bed.
Low-income person doing that. But one of the issues, by the way, on minimum wage, to come back, and I'm not changing the subject here.
Right, it's the same subject.
Is there's an argument whether or not it's valid. There's a lot of disagreement on this issue. If you raise the minimum wage, you reduce the number of people employed. For instance, McDonald's could not do without human beings, however, at present. But
correct.
They could cut the number of human beings they have working in a McDonald's restaurant in half.
Yeah, very easily. If you just raise the cost of employment a little bit, it doesn't cost that much to have a machine flip those burgers.
And literally, the burger flipping could be done by a machine, probably more efficiently.
A belt machine.
So
yeah.
That
very easy. This is technology we've had since,
and by the way,
Henry Ford.
Some companies are already doing this. So you have one person supervising several machines rather than five people working. That doesn't say that there won't be anybody there. But the fact is, only when... anybody who's doing something that is rote, that is they're doing the same thing over and over again, for instance, at McDonald's you have a certain number of things that are on the list, and the fact that a human being, you go up to a human being and you say, I would like such and such, and they interact with you, that's not necessary. Maybe the technology isn't quite good enough yet, but
it's right there. All you have to do...
If you've seen her...
Yeah, you just walk up to the counter... and imagine that there is a screen in front of you. It doesn't even have to be a touch screen. It can be just like their cash register.
And you could talk to it.
And you could talk to it, and you push a button. You say, this number five, meal group number five, and then you slide your card through it, and you step down the line a little bit, and you're handed your food, either by a machine or else. There may be somebody in there doing it, but this is not extreme technology we're talking about here. This is stuff that is freely available. It's expensive to buy the first time, but as soon as you get that, you can replace four or five people in there. If you raise the cost of those four or five people, you're going to remove those jobs.
Yep. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was listening to the State of the Union, and Obama said he was going to, through executive order, you know, change the minimum wage for, I guess, contractors that work
right.
for the
U.S. federal contractors.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Well, I'm assuming that contractors have contracts with the government that's based on a fixed price and all of that stuff. So even if he signs the executive order,
it's only for new contracts.
Yeah.
Oh, only for new. Okay.
And they can't change the old contract.
They take bidding, and they go with the lowest bidder. But so the lowest bidder is going to be more expensive from now on.
And it really, right now, the government already does that type of thing. For instance, on a federal contract, I had a person I knew once who was an expert at getting federal contracts. That's what they did. They didn't know how to do, this group of people did not know how to do any of the things that the federal government needed to be done. They didn't know how to do them particularly efficiently.
Except get the contract.
But what they did is they had the figureheads who technically but not actually had controlling interest in their company, whereas an American Indian, an African American, these are both women, and there was one other, I don't remember what it was, that who were both the women were veterans, disabled. One was an American Indian and one was an African American. Because what they had done is they looked at all the point scores that give you preferences in doing federal contracts, and they gave each of these women half of the company. And since minority-owned, women-owned, veteran-owned, disabled-owned, and disabled veteran-owned all got extra points on doing federal contracts, these two women technically each owned half the company. Now, what they did, though, in owning half the company, 1% of the company was owned by the guys who really controlled it,
and
who were all white males, by the way. But that 1% had
control,
had 99% of the vote.
Yeah.
And when they controlled the company. But the point is, the federal government, this is nothing new. The federal government's been doing that for many, many years.
And I got to say this. I mean, if you think about the hourly wages for the programmers that were putting together the website for the Affordable Care Act, the
probably
exchanges,
minimum wage.
If they were at minimum wage and the government spent $600 million on this program,
they would have eliminated, you know, they could, you know. They
somehow
might,
their minimum wage was higher than $10.10 somewhere.
What they probably should have done that would have been politically correct is they would have screwed up the software completely. But if they'd hired enough people at $10 an hour,
they could fix it somehow.
$6 billion on it, they could point to the fact that unemployment had dropped to zero.
Right. Yes. If you think about it that way, it makes sense.
Anyway, does that make sense to you, caller?
Yeah, I've got another question. You were talking about college education and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard that if you have a federal student loan that basically you own it for life until you pay it off. You can't get rid of it through bankruptcy and
some generally,
of the other tricks.
Is generally
that
right? True. Now,
unless you're a teacher, a firefighter, or a police officer, in which case sometimes those can be forgiven, but it's through some special techniques.
There are
that was my next question, because I've heard ads that if you are a teacher or a firefighter,
you don't have to
student loans.
Yeah, let me see this real quick. You don't have to follow those ads to do it. You can go through the administration of the school or the police department or the firefighters union or whatever. All of those links are freely available. You can Google it yourself. Those ads are paid for by somebody who's using money to market. They're getting a piece of the pie somewhere in there.
Yeah, and if you pay them to do something that you could do for yourself. But the issue of student loans going away, there are some kinds of bankruptcies that will eliminate student loans, but they are devastating bankruptcies where you basically have become indigent.
Yeah.
And you basically sell everything you own and you give it up and throw up your hands.
One of the problems there is the IRS still might want taxes due on the income that didn't happen from the forgiven loan.
Right,
they say, oh, well, you've got a loan forgiven for $80,000.
Right.
That's the same as $80,000 of income you owe us taxes.
But if you have, and I don't remember the chapter you're talking, you should have called in.
Ask a lawyer right before the.
Ed will knows this far better than we do. But I believe that there are kinds of bankruptcies that can even eliminate a tax debt, which is, so basically, the law recognizes that if you're truly indigent, you're unlikely to be able to pay off your debts, and so they eliminate them. On the other hand, the typical bankruptcy that is filed today says, basically, I get to keep my house, my car, I get to keep all my stuff, but I get either debt reduction or debt forgiveness.
Yeah.
And that kind of bankruptcy, no, you can't. If you owe the federal government form or fashion,
and you have assets,
you are not going to get out of it on that kind of bankruptcy.
Now, why is it that you were calling on that particular subject?
I was just curious. I heard the ad and the education discussion kind of.
Well, there are
piqued my interest.
It's just like I had education loans when I went through school, and I joined the Army. And as a result of joining the Army, I got this tremendously long deferral.
And you got free socks.
I did?
Yeah.
That's right. I got free socks for
pretty.
The Army.
You got nice green socks. It's an incentive to join.
Which smelled like mothballs. but eventually I had to pay it back. Student loans, federally guaranteed student loans, have always had some advantages if you went into certain directed fields where the government needed people.
There is a problem here, and this is one that is really, really well known in the world of economics, but pretty unknown in the rest of the world. Whenever you have a government that is trying to direct jobs into certain areas, it's generally the wrong areas.
Well, there's one exception to that.
What's that?
Soldiers.
Oh, that's true.
When
that's true.
Somebody is invading them,
that
and they try
true.
To direct jobs into.
Oh, right, and that is something that we've found to be true pretty much across the board. There's one area that the government is very good, and our government anyway, and that is our military is amazingly good. But there's a lot of restrictions on it that we don't want an efficient government in anywhere except the military, and then we have to make sure that they're efficient and not letting the military become too political an organization. And that's something we're pretty good at in this country.
Mm-hmm. But that's an institution that works very well. So, yeah, there are ways to get loan forgiveness if you've taken a relatively low-pay job. And
it's generally from a government employer.
So, all right.
A government employer of some kind.
One other kind of a way out thing. I heard some chatter that the administration was investigating what would happen if they forgave all the student loan out there, student debt, which I guess is right at $1 trillion. Now, that's an uphill push, and I understand, and it's probably fantasy land, but let's say for a minute did that. What do you guys think that would do to the economy? And the economy?
Oh, my.
Well, I think that...
That would be a great stimulus.
That would be a tremendous, absolute, earth-shaking stimulus in the economy. Forgiving student loans is an awful lot like making citizens out of illegal aliens.
Right. Well, you got to go back for a minute here, too. That money was actually spent.
Mm-hmm.
That money was spent in the private sector. The United States government wrote a check to people.
Not actually.
To colleges and such. Well, it's electronic.
No. The loan companies. What? When you say forgive the debt, the debt is not a governmental debt per se. The government simply guarantees that loan,
so
they're actually bondholders who have.
Some of them are federally subsidized. Some of the
they may be,
and that's
right.
Money from the U.S. budget, from the government's budget.
But the biggest chunk of the debt, the biggest loan issue that's out there right now is basically, what is it? Is it? It's not Fannie Mae. It's
Sallie Mae.
Sallie Mae. So people who own Sallie Mae bonds,
they are the ones have, that owe
right.
the debt that you owe them debt if so you have a student loan.
What would happen to forgive that debt is the government would simply go in and buy up all the Sallie Mae bonds,
which would cause the debt of the United States government to go up. So it's just a transfer of the debt. You have to, the government isn't allowed to just go to somebody and say, this isn't yours anymore. That's called eminent domain. Unless they pay properly, and it has to be in the interest of the greater public, which
now they could,
this might be.
You know, they could draw Janice Yellen in and all of the Federal Reserve.
Janet.
Oh, Janet Yellen in and the new Federal Reserve, all the governors, and lock them in a room in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
And say, okay, we want a new, this will be QE4. And what you're going to do is you're going to go out there and you're going to buy up all of the Sallie Mae bonds. It's about $1 trillion, which is peanuts to you guys.
It's more than that, actually. It's a pretty good amount.
It's actually like $14 trillion
right.
or something.
Right now, student loans are larger than revolving credit. This is one of the first times in history
right.
that's happened in the United States. We have more student loans outstanding than revolving debt, which means a lot more people have educations, but it also means that the education costs have come up.
And there's a... there is a real conundrum here, and I'm going to be...
You're using the big words
yes,
now.
Yes, I am. I'm going to go out on a bit of a limb here, and I'm going to tell you something.
Is it a conundrum limb?
It is a limb made out of 100% conundrum.
All right.
The idea of the government guaranteeing student loans was an extension of the GI Bill following World War II. It yanked us out of the Depression.
That's the thing
more
I was talking
that,
about. Employment
right.
goes up when you get trained.
But more than that, it was passed out of fear because following World War I, we had a Depression, and we had a Depression at least partially because of a combination of debt and people involved in World War
I. All these young people came back and they had no longer had jobs because they were
right.
overseas for years, and they come back and what do?
And it was a massive stimulus. And before the government got involved and started making student loans, the education system in the United States was really quite rational. A lot of students went to technical school to learn skills.
Correct.
And only a small minority actually went on to colleges and university to learn intellectual stuff. The idea that the government provides federally backed student loans is, I'm just going to say this, it's
part
wrong.
It's part of the reason.
And it's why right. the cost of education is so darned high.
Exactly.
It is why the debt load on students is so high. You say that they're lobbying to restrict the size of universities. The fact is, a traditional university, let's say the University of Texas or University of Mary Hardin Baylor, for example, mm-hmm. does give, and there's lots of measures to that across the board, generally tends to provide a better quality education than an online something or
correct.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But here's the point. They take up physical space.
Yep.
And there's only so, and physical space has become more expensive. It is irrational, and there's an awful lot of people who go to colleges and universities and come out of them with useless degrees, and then complain that they can't get a job. This is not just here; it's also in Europe, where they also guarantee yeah. student loans.
You said
the
it was a free market environment,
the
but
has,
there's a problem
right.
there. And this is the piece of the free market that is wrong.
But you're giving free money to people and tell them to go spend it someplace. So.
Yeah.
I personally, I know it's radical, it'll never happen because people want those guaranteed student loans because it gives them what they think of as free money that they have to pay back.
You're hitting all the points that I was planning on hitting.
But there's nobody in Congress. If I were a Republican in Congress right now, I would be saying, let's get rid of student loans, and I'd probably be kicked out.
There's no way you would ever be reelected. Yeah, the concept here.
But the government has no business being there.
Right. The accredited universities are the only ones that can accept federally subsidized student loans. That is the key there, which is why when I was talking about Ray Kurzweil, Singularity
it's
University.
It's not that hard to get accredited.
You cannot. Well, it is hard to be accredited because other universities lobby against you. How long did it take Central Texas
right.
College to become a four-year college?
How about the
decades?
University of Phoenix, though, this is what they did. is they basically got accredited there and then spread all over the country online and
correct.
Are gobbling up those federally backed dollars.
Correct.
And when people default on them, then the
government
has to pay.
The government
steps
in. So basically what I'm saying is this new type of learning is not going to the big pig trough of the government and saying, pay us. They're saying, you come in, you pay for the courses that you need for your job. That's it. And the cost is quite good. Now, they're not even going to try to get accredited. They're just going to say, you will know that Singularity University is good quality education, period. It's not going to be accredited by the federal government.
But you know what? When you're not accredited, it means you can't get a job with the federal government, and it means you can't get a job teaching, which...
Well, that's not why people go to Singularity University. They go there because they know when they're done at Singularity University, there are a lot of people that want to give them money to do startups. Google has a large fund where they are buying into companies that were created by people that were educated through Singularity. There's a whole bunch of investment capital that's just waiting for people that have good ideas that have shown the ability to do those ideas in these university formats and are going out to make a profit in it.
Yeah, and I, like I said, like we were talking about earlier, industrial policy sucks.
Yes, we're not in an industrial world anymore.
No, I mean industrial policy, meaning the government determining what needs to be done and what does not need to be done in the free market. And I'm going to tell you, the idea of guaranteed
directed economies
loans, the idea, which, by the way, Republicans and Democrats have both supported, conservatives and non-conservatives, the only person who I know of, libertarians are the only people who object to it. The concept of guaranteed student loans is why it costs so much, which is it's why, despite the fact inflation is virtually dead in this country, that the cost of a higher education goes up 7%.
5% for a year. I mean, when we have last year the inflation rose at about 1.7%, but college inflation was at 5%.
Well, actually, the interesting thing is public university inflation went up at 7. Private was like at 3 or 4. So when you average them together, it came out to 5. But it's what I'm trying to say is the answer is this is a bubble.
It is.
It is an unsustainable
technology
debt.
Technology already exists to replace it.
And it is driving people nuts and into bankruptcy. And then when they go into bankruptcy, unless they're willing to sacrifice everything, which most people aren't,
they just have to keep paying that
stuff.
They
still have to keep paying it. And it will eventually hurt everybody. And we won't get into that. We got to play some commercials. This is the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We've got about 12 minutes left in the hour, 11 minutes left in the hour, which means that people should start calling finally now, other than our one faithful listener who has been calling. We've been talking about government intervention. There's nothing that we're going to be able to do about government intervention in society. All I got to say is that if you're getting a student loan and taking responsibility for it, recognize you're going to be responsible for it. Recognize that it's a very good idea before taking out that loan to do some market research. And I don't mean just read the statistics from the university. Unfortunately, the college or university that you go to has a vested interest in getting you to take out that loan and give them the money. As a result, whatever they're trying to sell, whatever course area they happen to have an abundance of and they're trying to sell, the statistics they give you on jobs in that area may not be completely objective. I'm not saying they're trying to lie to you.
This is actually one of the scandals that has been quiet that I expected to be a big explosion. I expected people to be talking about this still. We'll talk about it. And that is college advisors from many colleges were paid commissions on the student loans that they were telling students they needed to get in order to get.
But that's gone by the wayside.
Right.
Now they're just given bonuses because they get more students into the areas
that
where
the college has an abundance
of capacity to teach. And, you know, colleges are like any other, colleges and universities are like any other business. They invest capital in an area. They hire instructors. They hire professors. They give them tenure. They have equipment. They have all kinds of things aligned with teaching a given subject. The job of that organization is to get as many customers, students, into that subject area as they can in order to make it profitable to the college or university. And if you don't think that colleges and universities, just simply because they're, quote, nonprofits, end quote, are in the business of trying to make money, just take a look at the budget for the football team and look at the amount of money that it brings in and look at the fact that in many colleges and universities, the biggest single economic entity in the school is the basketball or football program that brings in all that money. And you look at what the head coach gets paid versus to what the head of the mathematics department get paid, and you recognize their purpose is not to teach. Their purpose is to make money, and their purpose is to make money so that they can pay their department heads and their heads of this and that and the other more and more money. Douglas North, who is probably my favorite economist, an economic philosopher, which is what it really is, clearly says that institutions evolve to support their decision makers. And
correct.
The decision makers get paid better and better and better. And if you're producing more money for the school, you get a better pay. And if you don't believe that, take a look at the pay to the head coach of UT versus the pay of somebody else at UT.
Even the chancellor.
Right,
look
even
at
the
chancellor's pay versus the coach's pay.
The coach's pay is more. Why? Well, because it's economics. The coach brings more money to the school.
But wait, the student's not allowed to be paid for this.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm completely behind the athletic unions, and by the NCAA is 100% against it. And
right. Well, they say, well, this is not a professional sport. Well, if it's not a professional sport, then why do they have national news coverage of the games?
Oh, yeah.
Why is it that you're paying multiples of millions of dollars to the coach if it's not a professional sport?
Oh, yeah, it's a professional sport with slaves.
Right. Basically, you're not allowed to be paid. You might get a scholarship, but we're not going to give you any money for beating yourself against each other repeatedly.
The guy who, and I don't remember his name.
And letting us make lots of money.
Who's the head of this new union, which, by the way, almost certainly will be thrown out in the courts. The guy who's head of the new union, he says, you know, less than a third of the people who got football scholarships when he went, and apparently he's a big player, football player, or was, he said less than a third of those students actually graduated and got a degree. So what did they get?
Beat up.
They got long-term injuries that the school doesn't pay for.
Correct.
They got, you know, and we don't even know the nature of the long-term injuries.
The NFL is at least paying for the long-term injuries of the people that played there, where the schools are not. And the schools, because the schools are not the employee of the student that is playing, that they're doing it as an extracurricular activity, they're not as liable as the NFL, who is technically the employer of these players.
I personally think that if it's when a college treats, a college or university treats their athletic program as though it is a profit-making business.
It is. It's a massive profit-making business.
By the way, notably, right here in Central Texas, at the University of Mary Hardin Baylor, they don't do that.
Correct.
And I think it's just, you know, Coach George and whoever else is involved in that process needs, if you ever see them,
give them a round of applause.
Their students are held to the same academic standards as everybody else.
Well, it's supposed to be the same anywhere, but that's not the case.
Well, but what happens is their students, their football students graduate, and they still go to the national championship on a regular basis.
Right.
They're held to a high standard. They don't have the level of injuries that you have at the bigger schools. And very frankly, there's something fundamentally wrong with that system. And man, you know,
we're hitting schools all over the place.
And NCAA monster games. Wow. you might need to
if you look at the
concealed carry permit to get me out of the building.
If you look at the value that each of those players, the star players on these big teams for, you know, we're not big into sports. So this is part of the reason why we look at this and we say, it doesn't make sense economically. It truly is a form of indentured servitude. When the people, you know, if they stop playing, then they get kicked out of school because they can't afford to pay for the school because they've got a scholarship which requires them to play football. If they get injured too badly, they can lose their scholarship when the reason they got injured because of their scholarship.
It isn't really a scholarship.
No, it isn't.
That's a joke.
It is a joke. And when they try to hold, you know, it's kind of like the Olympics where they say these are amateur people, they're not professionals.
Not anymore.
Correct. And that's what I mean. When you have people that are basically doing this for a living, that the whole concept of college sports is a money maker for the college. It is massive.
Yeah, and I believe that they really, the players need to have a say in the type of equipment they wear, in what they do. I personally completely support the idea. I'll also tell you that Congress has passed laws exempting the NCAA from all of that stuff. So it isn't going to go anywhere. Okay, we're almost out of time.
Yes, we are.
And I did have a couple of other things here, if I can. For those of you who didn't tune in earlier, the markets are down in January. Whoopie-doo. The GDP is up. The production in the United States is up. There are a lot of very good signs out there that we're still in a steady recovery.
It's funny.
This is another irrational correction.
We've been talking for the past probably 4 months that we've got a correction coming, and now it's happening, and we're saying we've got a correction here. It's what it is.
Right, and there's a couple of other things out there. One of the interesting things that came out, I think it was Gene Epstein who came, no, it was Real Time Economics. They looked at the Federal Reserve's forecast for the GDP since the collapse, and they have been right on. And the GDP,
pretty amazing,
down the road has been running
just about exactly as predicted.
Unemployment, they missed it. Unemployment's coming down faster, but not because more people are being employed, but because more people are stopped looking for work.
Right. So if you add those people back in, their predictions are absolutely accurate again.
There is still a threat, which it may be having an effect on the market right now. That may be the issue. The debt ceiling deadline is only 6 days away.
Yeah.
And yeah, the Treasury can start to shuffle money around again, but
we need to get some stability.
There's
in here,
a level of silliness in here. Very frankly, if you have any opportunity to communicate with your representative or senators, when they pass bills saying spend money when we don't have income without raising taxes,
that's the point where they should lower the spending.
And then say we're going to control things by cutting off the debt ceiling to borrow money that we have mandated by law has to be spent. That is, pardon me, utter, it's not just foolishness, it's hypocrisy.
About out of time, but this is my example of that. As you go to a restaurant, you buy a really nice steak, they come to you with the bill, you've already eaten the steak, and you say, oh, I'm sorry, I've decided I don't want to put any more on my credit cards, so I'm not going to pay. That doesn't make sense. Anyway, we're about out of time. If you'd like to reach us off the air, you can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can get us voicemail locally at 947-1111 or 1-800-914-PLAN. Or you can go to our webpage, which is thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Wow, I got that all out in time.
Until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Fair, balanced. Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.